We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rippy Writes with Brian Scott Libby.
Transcripts can be obtained by drinking a fifth of bourbon, ramming your head through some drywall, and then writing down every thought you have.
What is up on a Tuesday? I am Brian Scott Rippy. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Rippy Writes podcast. Got two guests for you today. We have Scott Wright, Oklahoma State beat writer for the Oklahoman. Had him on to talk Spencer Sanders, why he left Oklahoma State, why he thinks he chose Ole Miss, his likelihood of playing, what he does well, what he doesn't do well, and just adding some more color and context to the situation of what seems to be kind of the oddball third guy in this now crowded Ole Miss quarterback room. So we got to talk to him, which I really appreciated his time. And then we talked to John McNamara, who covers Wisconsin and particularly recruiting for Badger Blitz, the Wisconsin Rivals affiliate. Really just something that I was interested in myself. I talked to him about the Phil Longo hire that I thought was a very like quiet hire in this offseason as they hire Luke Fickell, which was honestly the hire of the offseason. But like, how the hell Wisconsin, who's kind of known for its pro style, that's how they run things approach, is going to suddenly shift to the air raid. So talk to him about that, the changing recruiting footprint, I should say, and how he thinks Longo will fare at Wisconsin. So good show, football-centric show. I think you'll enjoy it. But before we get to that, though, I want to remind you the podcast is brought to you by Skybox Sports Picks. Who is Skybox Sports Picks? Well, glad you asked. They're the world's best gambling handicapping website, the inventors of the Skybox Matrix Interval, an advanced modeling mechanism that has helped propel Skybox to the top of the sports handicapping industry. Here's some stats for you. Skybox went 65-43, up 50 units last week in college basketball. Did you do that? Probably not. They're free plays just from following them on Twitter. 8-2 last week, which is absolutely ridiculous. They clean it up this time of year in college basketball. You got the NFL playoffs going. If you're into wagering, you're tired of losing money to your bookie, Skybox is the only option to profit in the long run. Their algorithm, as I've told you guys time and time again, absolutely murders it when it comes to college basketball. They are well over 60% year after year. That is their bread and butter. You need to cash in now while you can. They're crushing it in the NFL. They've got NASCAR coming up. You had Skybox Mark, who's coming on the pod here soon, to explain how he ended up plus 200 units in NASCAR last year and all kinds of other great stuff. All you have to do is go online, skyboxsportspicks.com, find a picks package. You can try it for a day, a week, a month. I'd recommend just signing up for the year-long all-access pass. You can do one sport, multiple sports, whatever. Buy it. They'll send you a nice color-coded spreadsheet that's got the picks by units. And boom, you're more equipped to profit than you were 5 minutes before. And if you use the promo code RIPPE, that's R-I-P-P-E-E, that'll get you 20% off any purchase. Check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Podcast is also brought to you by LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. Go see Greg. If you're a Rippy Right subscriber or listener, you get a free newsletter from me a couple times a week, all these podcasts and discounted meats. Just go in there, show him proof of subscription, and you get 3 6-ounce bacon wrap fillets for $20. That's about a $40 valuation that you're getting for $20. Boom. That's you and the buddies just throwing 3 steaks on the grill. Then go find all your own favorites there. They got all kinds of delicious sausages, fresh seafood, delicious sides. It's the best butcher shop in the world. It's the crown jewel of Oxford. Got to see my man Greg over the weekend. He wants to make your grilling experience great. Check him out. If you're in Oxford and you don't go by LB's, you're missing out. LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. All right, here is Scott Wright, Oklahoma State beat writer for the Oklahoman, on Spencer Sanders. All right. We now welcome on Scott Wright, Oklahoma State beat writer for the Oklahoman. I really appreciate you taking a minute out of your day to hop on the podcast here. I wanted to talk to you a bit, obviously, about Spencer Sanders, and I guess we'll get down right to it. He's a four-year starter. He spends 5 years at Oklahoma State. It's a kid that comes out of a pretty big program in the Dallas area, right? Denton Ryan, if I remember correctly. I guess we'll start there. Why do you think he left Oklahoma State?
You know, I think he just sort of felt like it was time for a fresh start. It was obviously a very difficult season, not just for him, but all the way around for the Oklahoma State football program. You know, really high expectations coming off of that Fiesta Bowl win, 12-2 season in 2021. And it just didn't pan out for a variety of reasons. And you know, Sanders was at the center of it. Health was his major issue in 2022. You know, dealt with an AC joint injury that really limited what he was able to do in terms of throwing the ball and just being on the field. So, but everything around the program just felt like it was crumbling for a while there. And, you know, I think that he felt like it was time to venture out and see if there might be a better opportunity out there for him somewhere else.
Did you pick up the sense that was a shock to the program, or were the kind of tea leaves pointing that way? What was kind of the Oklahoma State program reaction to Sanders deciding to move on? Because he announces it in early December, right, before the bowl game. So I guess they did have a little bit of time, but was that a surprise to people around the building?
I would say probably 50-50. Okay. There were some people that felt like Sanders was content where he was. You know, they were putting together a good NIL offer for him, things like that, that they felt like they had that he was going to stick with Oklahoma State until he decided to go pro, whenever that was. Honestly, there were a lot of people that was more their concern this offseason, was that he might jump to the NFL rather than use his super senior year. So, but there were people that understood that, you know, Spencer is intensely competitive. He and Casey Dunn butted heads at times. You know, he and other members of the staff, it wasn't always the smoothest relationship between all of them. So people understood that there were some feathers that had been ruffled and knew that it might be a possibility. So it wasn't a complete blindside, but on some levels, it was still a little bit of a surprise.
You mentioned health being kind of the predominant reason that 2022 is such a struggle for Oklahoma State collectively, or excuse me, Sanders specifically, but obviously that kind of leads to collectively, you know, things not going as well. You mentioned coming off the Fiesta Bowl year and having high expectations. Is there anything aside from Sanders' health that you could kind of point to that maybe led to a little bit of a downward turn below expectations? Like, kind of how did that year play out into what it became?
You know, there were some other things. Obviously, on the defensive side, they went through a coordinator change and lost a lot of really talented players. They had five guys off the 2021 defense who were on NFL rosters in 2022. So they lost a lot of talent off of that defense. So they were going through a lot of turnover along with the new coordinator. And then on the offensive side of the ball, the offensive line has just been out of whack the last few years. They got hit really hard by injuries during the COVID season of 2020. They went through a lot of guys that year and have just never really solidified that group again. They had a couple of injury issues up there that required some guys to change positions on a couple of occasions. But overall, it was a lot of the same kind of group that was playing. But they just really struggled to run block in particular, and that is so important to what Oklahoma State does to set up the play action game and zone read and different things that they like to do. So when they can't run the ball, it's a real struggle for that offense. And that was the you know, as far as schematic things, that was the big struggle that they had. And then you mix in Sanders and his shoulder issue, and it really complicated things.
You mentioned the new coordinator, Casey Dunn. He comes in. He was he was internal promotion, if I'm not mistaken. I think he'd been around the program since around 2019, maybe even before that.
Yeah, long, long time. He's in his 12th year with OSU now.
So everyone, obviously, Gundy's an offensive guy. Like, when you mentioned kind of the relationship, it always being the smoothest rides, what was different, in your opinion, about kind of the Oklahoma State offense this year that maybe led to some tension or whatever the case may be. Like, how, Gundy seemingly being there so long, you would think kind of the system relatively is a system. How different was it this year with a new coordinator, despite having an offensive head coach, than maybe it looked in the first 4 years of Sanders' career in Stillwater?
That's one thing that I think kind of complicated things for Sanders. You know, he was recruited by Mike Yurcich. Yurcich was the offensive coordinator his redshirt year when he was his true freshman year when he redshirted, and then Yurcich left for at Ohio State at that time. He's bounced around a little bit since then, but so then Sean Gleason comes in. He lasts 1 year. He's off to Rutgers, and then Casey Dunn gets promoted. And you know, he was a receivers coach where the other two guys were quarterback coaches. They brought in Tim Rattay as the quarterbacks coach. And he and Spencer Sanders seem to get along really well from what it appears on the outside. But it didn't always translate to a real good mesh with Casey Dunn as a receivers coach and offensive coordinator. So, I think Sanders' competitive drive and, not always understanding when it's maybe when it's safe to punt or maybe just disagree. Maybe it's not that he doesn't understand, but he just disagrees with a call when he wants to go for it on a fourth down or wants to be able to throw the ball in a certain situation and they're telling him to run the ball. So I think that when things began to crumble a little bit, they didn't see eye to eye more often on just philosophy and play calls and when to do certain things. And I think that's where that really festered for those two guys.
Were they much different schematically than they were in 2021? Or is it just kind of the small things when you bring in a new guy in the room in a different role and different relationships?
Yeah, no, it was schematically the same offense. Honestly, they were actually better on offense in the first half of 2022 than they were in 2021, because they had some O-line issues. They had a lot of injuries at receiver in 2021. They were playing a bunch of true freshmen at receiver, so they sort of limited what they were doing in the passing game that year. They come out in 2022 from the start. They're playing at a much faster tempo. They're going really quickly. They're putting up good numbers. And then Sanders hurts the shoulder there the week before that TCU game where they suffer their first loss of the season. Then they bounce back and have a good win against Texas the following week, where he led a comeback from 17 down for a victory on homecoming in Stillwater. And then it just all went south from there. They only won one more game the rest of the way.
As far as Gundy, I mean, you have a guy that's a four-year starter. You would think him coming back for, his super season, that would kind of lead you as having stability maybe when it's not found elsewhere on the roster. I guess I'm kind of bouncing around here, but like from a fan base temperature perspective, like was there a mutual, I guess, not understanding, but mutual feeling about maybe wanting to get a fresh start, or were people pretty distraught about seeing him go?
I'll say this: Spencer Sanders, over the tenure of his four-year starter tenure, was a very polarizing player for Oklahoma State fans. A lot of fans really appreciated his athletic ability, his toughness, his knowledge of the offense, his ability to go and make plays. And then there was another large group of fans that were really frustrated by the fact that he threw 40 interceptions over four seasons. And, they don't have a lot of respect for the fact that he's the second winningest quarterback in Oklahoma State history. He won 30 games as starting quarterback, only Mason Rudolph won more. There's a big divide in terms of how fans view Spencer Sanders, his value to the program, and what his 4 years were about. So there were some people that were happy to see him go and some people that were really, really bothered by the fact that he didn't stick around for one more season.
You alluded to some of it a second ago, but just like scouting report on Sanders and from what you've seen, what does he do well? What are some of his shortcomings?
But I'll start with the shortcomings, because obviously I just mentioned the 40 interceptions, and he really brought those numbers down over his last two seasons, really got that under control and was less of a risk to throw the ball to the other team. You know, you go back to the 2021 is when he really started to make some progress in that area. He did have two games against Baylor. He threw seven interceptions, one of those being a four pick game in the Big 12 title game that a lot of people remember. So, you know, that he throws four picks, they lose by 5 points. It was a rough day. So, you know, that's the area where you kind of point to with his shortcomings. Had some fumble issues early in his career, really seemed to get those under control later in his career. When you talk about his strength, the first thing you've got to talk about is his speed, his ability to get out of the pocket, make things happen, you know, make plays on called run plays, or just when things are breaking down. He's one of the most gifted running quarterbacks I've ever covered. So, you know, he's rushed for more yards than any quarterback in Oklahoma State history. And they've had some guys that ran the ball decently well, Zach Robinson and guys like that. If you go back earlier in the, you know, the history book. So, but that's the thing that stands out. He does have a strong arm. His accuracy improved over the course of his career until the injury hit late, and then it struggled a little bit, and you saw his completion percentage dip just a bit over the second half of the season. But he got much better in that over the course of his career, and just the intangibles of his toughness and his competitiveness really stand out to a lot of people who watch him and get to know the type of player that he is.
Yeah, when you look at just like his raw numbers over what is a very large sample size as a college player, now it's pretty consistent, right? He's going to be around somewhere between 2,500 yards in that high teens touchdown range, and somewhere if you're flirting with 9-10 interceptions. You know, what did you get the sense of like what he projected as a professional prospect, as a thrower? In what ways is he limited, and what does he do well? It's just specifically throwing the football, you know, outside of decision making, just kind of in the throws he can and cannot make.
Yeah, he's not incredibly limited in that way. There are some throws, you know, the deep balls weren't always perfect, but he's not terrible in that. There's nothing, there's not an area where you feel like, yeah, he just can't make that throw. There are some areas where he struggles at times, but for the most part, pretty consistent thrower. You know, I think when you look at him, you know, as an NFL guy, you know, you look at you know, a guy like Skylar Thompson that just started for the Dolphins, you know, kind of in that realm. I think, you know, he's a guy that's got the talent to go latch on somewhere and be a third team guy. And, you know, then once that happens, who knows, you find yourself starting a playoff game like Skylar Thompson did. So, I saw Skylar Thompson play a few games. I saw Brock Purdy play four times, even when he was at Iowa State. And I don't feel like those guys are noticeably better than Spencer Sanders. I think that he's right in that range where he could get on a roster and be a third team guy at the NFL level.
You know, in some ways, between like the deep ball accuracy that you mentioned to the running to the sometimes questionable decision making, hell, it sounds like you're describing Jackson Dart, which it just kind of makes this whole Ole Miss quarterback dynamic so interesting. From your standpoint, were you surprised? I know it maybe came a little bit of a surprise that he's just transferring versus going pro that you alluded to earlier, but what was your reaction to him transferring to Ole Miss, a place that has an incumbent starter? I don't necessarily think you could describe Dart as entrenched. He certainly wasn't the cause of Ole Miss's problems this year, but I also don't think he performed, you know, by far and away well enough to, it's like, no question he's the guy. I mean, clearly they bring in two more quarterbacks. What was your reaction to him going to a place that, you know, seemingly had now a crowded quarterback room in Ole Miss?
That was a little bit of a surprise and led to, you know, probably a few extra phone calls on my end trying to sort of figure out what might be going on. It didn't turn anything up, so I can't share any great information with you on that. But it was a little bit of a surprise that he went that direction. Seemed like there were some other programs out there that really needed a guy to step in and be the guy from day one. And you thought that might be what he was looking for. But there seems to be something about Lane Kiffin's offense. I know he's really dove into that playbook and has fallen in love with what he sees there. And, you know, there's just something about it that really lured him. And you know, maybe we'll find out one of these days exactly what, you know, his thought process was. He's been really quiet on that front in terms of talking about it outside of an interview or two that he's done. So we'll see what else surfaces as this goes on. But yeah, very interesting to see him go somewhere that, like you said, you got a starter coming back. You got another guy coming in the portal. So yeah, a lot of competition to be had right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think from like an Ole Miss standpoint, he's kind of the wild card, right? Because Ole Miss had to go get another quarterback. They were going to go into the spring with one scholarship quarterback on the roster, which is just like, no bueno, that won't really fly. They bring in a kid in Howard who I don't think is ready to play yet this year, but you had a guy with a lot of future. It's like, okay, he can kind of sit behind Dart, then you'll see kind of what happens next year after that. But then Sanders is kind of the oddball in the mix, right? 1 year of eligibility left. Like, what does this actually look like? And like, why bring in a third guy there? From the standpoint of, I know covering college athletics, you get these kids in a very limited capacity, but he was there a long time. Like, what kind of kid is he? What sense did you get in terms of just leadership qualities and what kind of person he is in the limited, you know, space that you were able to see him in?
Yeah, I'll start with leadership wise. Really strong leader, intensely competitive, and guys are drawn to that. You know, early in his career, he was a little too emotional and had to rein that in some because he would get a little too fired up about stuff when things didn't go right, and he had to understand how that was impacting the players around him. He learned that and became a guy that is really strong in the locker room, really strong leader on the field, the type of player that is, you know, coaches always say, you know, you want your best player to be your hardest worker, and he's that type of guy. You know, I talked about the toughness. He's a guy that never shies away from contact. Mike Gundy wished he would have probably a little bit more often during his career. You know, he's going to go out and if you call a reverse and he needs to go make a block, he's going to go make a block. You know, he's going to try to get that extra yard rather than stepping out of bounds early. He's going to do what he has to do. So he's a guy that players really enjoy playing with and playing for. So, you know, he has a command on the sidelines and on the field that is really strong and will unite a team.
And the reason I ask that is recruiting in a lot of senses, really at any level, whether it's the Porter or high school, it's about promises and whether they get kept or not, I guess kind of remains to be seen. I don't know the averages on those things, but I would argue with the amount of kids in the portal, probably more promises broken than kept. But the reason I mainly ask that is as surprising as a decision as it may be on the surface, it doesn't seem like from the vibe that I'm picking up from you and kind of just everything I've read about him, that it's surprising that he would not be deterred by going into a place that has a starter coming back, another kid coming in, a crowded quarterback room. I guess for the lack of a better phrase, it doesn't sound like it surprises you at all in the sheer sense that like he doesn't seem to give a shit. He'll just go beat them out.
Oh, absolutely. Intensely competitive, like I've said multiple times. But, you know, he signed in the class coming in for the 2018 season. And 2017 was Mason Rudolph's final year. He was going to the NFL. And Sanders was fully prepared to show up and compete for that job that summer and going into August. You know, Mike Gundy felt more comfortable with a redshirt senior that they already had on the roster and sort of put the whole quarterback competition to bed before the guys even got on campus in August for camp that year. But Sanders was fully prepared to come in and try to win the job there. He does not shy away from that idea. That's why, you know, that's part of the reason that I think Ole Miss was able to stay in the mix and ultimately win out is that he's not afraid of a little bit of competition. So he is supremely confident in his abilities and I know he fully believes he's going to come in there and win that job.
How long, like, so you mentioned that redshirt year that he had, and then the next year, obviously he wins the starting job. Like, what was that kind of like at the beginning of his career with what you remember about that competition? And then like, how long after that was it clear? Like, okay, this guy is probably the guy for the next couple of years. How quickly did that become clear?
Right away. Go back and look at his career debut up at Oregon State in 2019. He had a really good day, threw the ball well, ran the ball well, made some plays with his feet, and they go up there and win fairly easily on the road, his first game as a starter. and you knew right away that this guy was going to be in that seat for the long haul. You know, and you know, he had a really accomplished high school career, and you know, there were a lot of people that even in that 2018 season when he's redshirting, we're talking about him as the quarterback of the future. So you sensed it right away, and then he went out and showed it really early, and settled in pretty quickly as that guy. And you know, that you know, he had his growing pains those first couple of years, but he really really persevered through that stuff and improved over the course of his career.
Was he ever at risk throughout that time getting benched? Was there ever a moment where it was like, is he not the guy, or was it pretty much he was it all the way and it was smooth sailing in that regard? Or do you recall a time maybe when things got a little dicey in that regard?
Not really. You know, there were moments when fans were upset, but it never got to the point where you thought that Mike Gundy was close to pulling the trigger. Part of that was that they didn't have a ton of depth all the time at quarterback. You know, they had you know, they had Drew Brown, who was a guy who had transferred from Hawaii, and you know, had put up some decent stats up there, but wasn't crazy good. And then they brought in Shane Illingworth, who's at Nevada now, but you know, was a four-star recruit you thought was maybe the guy just waiting his time until Sanders is gone. And but you never really felt that that they were all that close to ever pulling the trigger on a quarterback change.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
That was a huge get for them. You mentioned like kind of being a mature kid, polished, uber competitive. I lived in Dallas for a couple of years and freelanced some high school football. And coming from Mississippi at the time, I was like, dear God, this is like college-like, the way these kids are just polished, the way they're programming. I mean, from the facilities to everything, it really is kind of wild how far ahead kids in Texas, particularly at the quarterback position, seem to be just from like a handling themselves standpoint at times than you might see from other places. That was a pretty big get for Oklahoma State at the time, right? I mean, that's a Gatorade Player of the Year, if I remember correctly. Denton Ryan, Dallas metro area kid. Him not going to a Texas school, I don't pretend to remember what his recruitment was like, but that was a pretty big land for them at the time, was it not?
Yeah, it was. They had identified him really early. Then there were some programs, some big-name programs that came in late and tried to swoop him away and didn't have any success. You know, he did have some injury issues in high school, had a torn ACL somewhere along the way there. And so some people were sort of in wait and see mode. And then he goes out and has a great senior year and things really picked up again for him. And but Oklahoma State had stayed loyal to him that whole time. And he felt he needed to reciprocate that by sticking true to his commitment. So it was a really important signing when they landed him.
Not that you'd like think like this far into it, you know, 9 months down the road, but like, let's just, I think the general sense now, at least without knowing anything, without going through spring, that people seem to think around here Dart probably has the edge. He will probably end up winning this job. After talking to you, that, you know, there might need to be a little more thought given to the fact that, like, okay, he might actually come do this and pull this off and be the starter for a year. But let's just say, on like the flip side, if Dart is the starter and he exhausted this last year, I don't pretend to know the transfer rules about whether these kids can transfer again. Like, could he go somewhere after spring? I don't know. It confuses the hell out of me. I'll probably go look it up at some point, but it's like on the surface, I'm like, I don't know how this works. But for you, like the way the Spencer Sanders story's in, how shocked would you be if he made this decision, he transfers to Ole Miss, and then he spends the last year not playing? Like, how surprising of an ending to the career would that be? It just doesn't seem to jive with anything on his trajectory, if that makes sense.
Right. Oh, no, I completely agree. It would be really odd to watch it end that way. After everything that he accomplished at Oklahoma State, you know, all the great things that he did as a player here. I mean, you go through the OSU history books and you get to the quarterback stats, and he's first, second, or third in a lot of major categories in Oklahoma State history with what he's done over the course of his career. So, so to see it fizzle out that way would be a really odd feeling, and knowing his competitiveness, I know how tough that would be for him as well.
How differently do you think anything plays out in 2022 if the Big 12 championship in 2021 goes their way? Because they probably make the playoff, do they not?
Yeah, most likely. I really think so. I think they get in the playoff if that had happened. If they got tackled, Desmond Jackson got tackled a couple inches short of the pylon with that game winning touchdown. If he reaches it just a little farther, hits that pylon, I think they get into the playoff. Then you don't know. I mean, with the early signing period, obviously a lot of recruiting is already done by that point, so it's hard to say how much it would have impacted that specific recruiting class. Right. But they did lose some starters to the transfer portal that offseason, so it could have changed some things there. Maybe some defensive guys had hung around rather than going to other places where they thought they were going to have better opportunities. So it definitely could have changed some things for sure, because, you know, two or three guys on that defense could have made a whole lot of difference. So, it would have been interesting to see what, how that would have changed the future had that touchdown gone in and they come to the playoff.
Last thing before I let you go, what's kind of next for this Gundy-led Oklahoma State program? I wouldn't necessarily, I don't know enough about it to say it's at a crossroads, but it does seem like it's at an interesting phase. He's been there a long time. He's gotten close to the BCS or the playoff or whatever crazy version we have in college football of the college football playoff. You got a year like this 2023 season is going to be bizarre because it's like everyone's waiting to get the 12 seat table to where it's like, hey, this is actually a little bit more realistic, particularly programs in the SEC West. But like, what is next for this Gundy led Oklahoma program going forward?
I mean, it does feel like it's at a little bit of a crossroads right now. You know, he just hired a new defensive coordinator today, hired a guy from the Division II level, which is not out of character for Mike Gundy. He's done that before with offensive coordinators. But at a point where you're coming off of a 7-6 season, a Division II hire doesn't get fans real fired up.
It's not winning the press conference.
Right, exactly. So it's been a little bit of a weird day following Oklahoma State fans that are, there are some that are in Gundy's corner no matter what, and they trust him to develop the program. And there are others that wanted to see him go out and throw some money at some of the big names that are out there to come in and run his defense. But, so today's been a weird day. And, they had a ton of transfer portal movement. In addition to Sanders, they had 16 scholarship guys in all that went out. Several of them were starters. And, they brought in a bunch of new guys to replace them, but still not the same as guys that you've invested a few years in to build them into what you want them to be in your program. So, it's a really interesting spot that they're in because they need to get this offense back on track. And obviously now they're having to do it with a new quarterback and Alan Bowman, who transferred in. He was a starter for a few years at Texas Tech, went up to Michigan, was third stringer up there for a couple of their playoff runs. But he hasn't really played much in 2 years, and now you're handing the offense to this guy. So it's a really interesting spot.
Gundy more or less cranky post I'm a man, I'm 40, whenever that was a year ago? Like, what is Gundy like now compared to, like, I mean, I use that as kind of a joke, but like 5-10 years ago, is he more or less prickly?
For the most part, less.
Okay.
Now he had a little bit of a blow up with a reporter after the guaranteed rate bowl when he got asked about potential staff changes, and you know, he didn't care for the timing of that question or the question in general. That said, we haven't gotten to speak to him since then, so we wouldn't have had another chance to ask that question. But still, but overall, he's been a really entertaining guy to cover. I was on this beat in 2008. Then I stepped away for a little while, came back in 2017. Since that time, he's been really relaxed and pretty fun to interact with and deal with most of the time.
He is Scott Wright, Oklahoma State beat writer for the Oklahoman. I really appreciate the time and insight, my man. Be well.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
All right, that was Scott Wright. I really appreciate his time. Thought he added some pretty valuable insight on the Spencer Sanders situation. I'll try to get the whole grad transfer thing cleared up, whether he's there for spring and how that works here for the next show. Probably should have looked at that beforehand, but I really appreciated Scott's insight on that. Now we're going to go to John McNamara on how Phil Longo is going to turn Wisconsin into a air raid-esque offense. I just found this very interesting. I thought it was kind of an talked about hire. I don't know if it's underrated or overrated for this college football offseason. So talked a little Luke Fickell, talked a lot of Phil Longo, how they kind of changed the recruiting footprint already, and what to expect from the Badgers next year. All right, we now welcome on John McNamara. He covers Wisconsin for the Rivals affiliate there in Madison, particularly the recruiting angle of it. I appreciate you coming on. This may be one of the more random podcast requests you've ever gotten, but a hire Wisconsin made piqued my curiosity, and I feel like it wasn't talked about as much this offseason. So we'll get right to it. Phil Longo spends the last couple of years at North Carolina. He was at Ole Miss before that. I think Ole Miss fans remember him well, some pleasant, some not so pleasant memories. I guess we'll just start there. So they pull off a hell of a hire in Luke Fickell, and he brings in Longo as his OC. How surprising was that around in and around Madison as far as the hire? Because it is certainly not the brand of football Wisconsin is accustomed to playing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A team that's been a pro style system for, you know, the last almost 30 years now, dating back to when Barry Alvarez came over. And, you know, there was a little blip on the radar when Gary Anderson came over for 2 years, and he wanted to incorporate some, you know, 3 or 4 wide receiver sets and kind of open it up a little bit. But, you know, what Phil Longo wants to do in this air raid offense is a complete change in philosophy, a complete change in scheme from what Wisconsin is used to with running the football with big offensive linemen. So, you know, from a fan base percentage or for perspective of, you know, the feedback that we're getting, the excitement around the program, I think a lot of fans are ready for that. And it's going to be very interesting to cover. Again, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, but it has been the same offense for that whole portion of time. So it's going to be very interesting to see what spring camp looks like. You know, they brought some quarterbacks in, they brought some wide receivers in. And I think the overall, you know, buzz around Madison is that the fan base is pretty excited about the change.
Yeah, and they made a hell of a hire in Fickell, and I may have buried the lead in that aspect of it. I guess we're going to get to more Longo piece of it. What was the reaction to that? I mean, obviously the approval rating is just through the roof, but how quickly from the outsider's perspective, it kind of came together quickly, because when the old Ole Miss Kiffin to Auburn thing was going around, Fickell was a name that, you know, potentially Ole Miss people thought they could take a swing at. Whether he said yes, who the hell knows? I got the sense that probably was not going to happen. How quickly did that happen, and how surprising was it that they landed Luke Fickell?
Yeah, very surprising. You know, even when we came out with our first couple hot boards and stuff like that, where, you know, you put 10 or 12 names together, Luke Fickell didn't seem like a realistic one because of the people that you talk to. He would leave potentially for Notre Dame and potentially for Ohio State. And he seemed like someone who was out of Wisconsin's reach, to be very honest with you. And then, you know, as the process kind of wore on at Wisconsin, all signs pointed to Jim Leonard. And we had a lot of Jim Leonard content ready to publish and ready to go. And then it really came out of left field that, you know, Luke Fickell was the guy and they were hiring him. And it was crazy. I mean, I was very surprised. Luke Fickell is not on my radar. I can't imagine he was on very many people's radar throughout that process. It really looked like Jim Leonard, but you know, in the end, it was Fickell. And again, he hasn't even coached a practice yet at Wisconsin, but it seems to be, at least this offseason, from what he's done, an excellent hire for the Badgers.
Yeah, and you know, I've been there with the whole hot board thing, and like Fickell kind of runs a spread concept. I'm just curious, like when you obviously it's, you know, based off talking to people, but how much of just like, you know, when you get to the fifth or sixth name on a hot board, how much of it is like, you know, something that might fit what's become accustomed to known as Wisconsin structure? Like, was it kind of out of left field in that sense as well?
Yeah, and Wisconsin has always made very Wisconsin type hires where, you know, you're looking for guys who were connected to the program. So, you know, Dave Aranda was a name that was brought up quite a bit because he was Wisconsin's defensive coordinator. You know, would he be an option? You know, Lance Leipold, you know, coached in the state of Wisconsin. I had a lot of success at UW-Whitewater. So you were looking for those type of connections because that is what Wisconsin has traditionally done. And, you know, Chris McIntosh went outside the box, Wisconsin's athletic director, and you know, the story that he tells, and when we had availability with him, is, you know, kind of going and switching cars and making sure the license plate wasn't tracked. And, you know, it was all very done, you know, done in secret, you know, when he was interviewing Luke Fickell and, you know, securing his signature, I guess, to come coach Wisconsin. So again, it was kind of a complete shock. And really these last handful of weeks and months have been too, you know, covering what he's done in the transfer portal and covering the hires that he's made. So it's been quite a run. And again, like I said, all this has led to, you know, probably the most anticipated season that I can remember covering for Wisconsin fans.
Why did they make a move at head coach? It's a guy that's won a lot. Again, from an outsider's perspective, you just look at the win-loss record, the consistent success Wisconsin's had. It was like, whoa, like that kind of was shocking. But it didn't seem shocking to people around the program and people who cover the program, at least not as shocking. What went into that and why was he fired?
Yeah, well, I would say that was a shock too. I mean, very un-Wisconsin thing to do to fire a coach, you know, midway through the season. And you know, like you said, on paper, Paul Chryst looks pretty good. I think he was right around 72% winning percentage. But the program, it kind of dipped off in the last handful of years. You know, the offense in particular, you know, just got stale and stagnant, and there was no real innovation there. And, you know, whether Chryst McIntosh went into this year thinking that he needed to see significant improvements or not, or that seemed to come together very quickly as well. So, you know, Paul Chryst being fired was a shock. Luke Fickell being hired was a shock. I don't know which one was bigger, but it's been a wild fall and a wild winter in Madison.
Yeah, it really has. And like now, I mean, obviously that's one that breeds excitement, but like back to the Longo piece of it, because that's kind of like the Ole Miss centric. He comes in, he's inherited a wealth of talent, right? He's got Metcalf, Lodge, A.J. Brown, Dawson Knox, pretty good quarterback, and Jordan Tom, who started off as actually the Shea Patterson era, which seemed to turned out to be pretty short-lived. They ate up a lot of yards. They moved the ball a lot. They struggled in the red zone. He seemingly kind of carried some of those struggles over to North Carolina, but I don't think there's any doubt that between the 20s that he moves the ball pretty well. I guess I'll start from this standpoint. You cover the recruiting aspect of it pretty well. Does Wisconsin have the ability to have a recruiting footprint conducive to that kind of speed-centric, aired-out system?
They didn't prior to Phil Longo. Okay. You know, it wasn't even in the conversation. You know, what he's been able to do on the recruiting front in the transfer portal has been it's been outstanding. And I don't know that a single coach since I've been doing it has had the impact that he's had. You know, at the quarterback position, you know, that room was just about empty. And he goes in and he gets Nick Evers from Oklahoma. And then he gets Mordecai from SMU, who's likely going to be Wisconsin's starter. And then he goes and gets another former four-star kid in Braden Locke from Mississippi State. So, you know, he revamps that room through the portal. And then he goes in the 2024 class and gets Mabry Matower, a big four-star kid from Texas. So just at that position, what he did in a few weeks, Wisconsin had never seen that type of success in 20 years at the quarterback position. It's just not a spot that they recruited very well. And then the Longo impact kind of trickles into then receivers, where Wisconsin goes in the transfer portal and gets C.J. Williams from USC. And, you know, they get three other guys through the portal as well. So all of a sudden, it's almost a complete overhaul of the quarterback position and the wide receiver position. And now you're thinking, okay, they can get this up and running right away this year. There shouldn't be, you know, a period where they need to, you know, obviously they're going to have to learn the offense. There's a lot of new pieces here, but, you know, specifically with Tanner Mordecai coming in, the expectation is that this thing gets running right away and they can compete for a Big Ten title right away in 2023.
Well, how would you describe Wisconsin's recruiting footprint prior to Longo? Because like someone down here in Mississippi who doesn't know any better, you look at them on Saturdays, they got a big bruising running back, a bunch of offensive linemen that seemingly just ate cornstalk and cheese curds for the first 18 years of their life, and they just pound you into submission. What does that recruiting footprint look like for the 20 years prior to that? Is it a lot of in-state kids? Like, what exactly does that look like?
Yeah, you know, in-state kids, you know, the old adage is that, you know, Barry Alvarez said, I can, you know, get my big bodied linemen from inside the state, and, you know, a lot of time linebackers as well, and he's got to get his hands and his feet in other spots. So, yeah, Wisconsin always recruits in the state very well, but you can't make a living there. You got to go outside the state. They recruit, you know, Illinois, Ohio, New Jersey. They go to the East Coast, and then, you know, they've traditionally gone down to Florida quite a bit as well. And I think Luke Fickell will have a lot of those areas as well. But if you look at Longo, he's just attacked Texas. And, right. You know, all three of those quarterbacks are from, I should say four with the 2024 kid Matower. And, you know, the connection that he seems to have there, he's going to ride as long as he can because the one offer that he's made so far in the 2025 class is from Texas as well. So, you know, Wisconsin's been in that state. I mean, I guess every school in the country goes into Texas, but he seems to have a pretty nice niche there in terms of quarterback recruiting. And I think he's going to ride that as much as he possibly can while he's at Wisconsin.
From the transition to the pro style scheme that they've had for so long into what this is fascinating to me because like I looked, you know, I watched on the other side of the state here where Mississippi State goes to the air raid. And that first year, because Leach recruits such a specific type of lineman, he needs very specific types of receivers, not on just the inside, but the outside. But particularly up front, it was kind of a rough transition because that's a totally different type of lineman. But to me, just outside looking in, it seemed like if you got the speed on the perimeter, you got the quarterback offensively. It can't be that different blocking if you have big, capable offensive linemen. How like smooth or rough of a transition in year one do you see this being in terms of what they add on the roster, what they're able to do in the portal, and kind of implementing guys into the mold of what that offense is supposed to be, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, I think, you know, and they've said this kind of on both sides of the ball, that they're going to, you know, not just gut this, what's going on at Wisconsin, and start fresh. You know, it's very much going to be an air raid system, but Wisconsin has two very good running backs in Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi. And I think you'll see some, you know, Phil Longo at North Carolina at Wisconsin, at least right away, where, you know, I think one year they led the ACC in rushing too. So I don't know that this team's going to throw 65 times a game. Phil Longo talked about balance doesn't mean, you know, running 40 times and passing 40 times. It means getting, you know, all your playmakers involved in the offense and putting them in a position to have success. So, you know, I don't think this team is just going to be primarily pass, pass, pass. I think it's going to be a more balanced look. But again, you know, Braylon Allen came out and said, I'm looking forward to running against some six-man boxes as opposed to 8-9-man boxes. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the running backs are able to do. Because like we talked about earlier, everyone that Wisconsin faced was not worried about them passing the ball. They stacked the box and said, go ahead and pass if you want to. We don't think you can have success there. And they would try to limit the run game. So with this offense, I don't think you'll be able to do that. And they do have the weapons now in place to really have a balanced attack through the air and on the ground if Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi are healthy this year.
So they hire Fickell, big-time hire. He brings in an out-of-the-box coordinator. We talked a lot about this footprint versus what it is now. Do you think, and I'm asking you just to kind of speculate and guess here to some degree, do you think Fickell made that hire with the intentions of, like, we can't do this the way it's been done for two decades if we want to reach a higher ceiling? Because you're talking about a program that's really a model of consistency, but not quite to that upper echelon that everyone's vying to get to. Another weird dynamic is now there's about to be 12 seats at this playoff table. So who knows like how that changes expectations. But do you think that was a like conscious effort to kind of bring them out of the mold they'd been in for two decades?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a lot of these guys probably have their short list of guys. And I would imagine Phil Longo was, you know, on Fickell's list. Fickell talked about, hey, I wanted to hire him at Cincinnati, and it just didn't work out. And, you know, Phil Longo went and said, well, the only job I would leave North Carolina for would to be work under Luke Fickell. You know, whether that's true or not, obviously there's a connection there. So I think that, you know, as Fickell's looking at these jobs, he has a short list of, hey, I'd try to bring Phil Longo to wherever I went. So I don't know that he looked at Wisconsin necessarily and said, we can't do what we've been doing. I think it was more of a like, hey, I'm going to look to bring Phil Longo wherever I go, and it happened to be Wisconsin. But, you know, if there was ever an offense that needed a change, you know, needed some fresh set of eyes on it, it was probably Wisconsin's. And again, it's going to be a very different switch, you would imagine, with a pro style run team as opposed to an air raid. But it'll be very interesting to see what balance they kind of strike this spring and going into the fall as well.
From like Badger fans' perspective, how long is that going to take to get used to? And just the terms of the amount of plays, what that looks like, the amount of throwing the football around the yard. I know we're not there yet, but like, how do you see that going? I imagine that's got to be a pretty stark contrast.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, again, this has been almost 30 years in the making of ground and pound and 3 yards in a cloud of dust or whatever, you know, little saying you want to say about Wisconsin football. And it's going to look different. But again, I think it's a very welcome change from what Wisconsin fans have seen over the last 2-3 years under Paul Chryst. You know, some of it him calling the offense, some of it Joe Rudolph calling the offense, some of it no one knew who was calling the offense. So again, fans are ready for this, you know, a large chunk of them. So I think they'll get used to it real quick if they start winning football games.
And lastly, before I let you go, like I know it's still in the early stages of it, but like, how have you noticed how you've had to change covering recruiting with all of this? Because clearly it's a way different approach. And look, college football as a whole, the recruiting's way different. My head spins every day trying to figure out who Ole Miss is after, not after in the portal and how all that works. But just in terms of like the type of kid and all of that, like how are you adjusting to covering it differently? Because it does seem, particularly on the offensive side of the football, they are recruiting different types of players.
Yeah, it's you know, I say this kind of stuff, and it, you know, Wisconsin has had a ton of success. So, yeah. You know, it's not saying one thing, it's because the other thing is bad. It seems to be a more modern approach to recruiting where, look, they're trying to create buzz around the program. And Paul Chryst, that wasn't his focus. I mean, he wanted to be a head football coach and coach football. He wasn't always interested in doing the other thousand things that a head coach at a Power Five school had to do. And I think Luke Fickell understands a lot of those things, whether he likes to do them or not. I don't know that anyone likes to go on Twitter. I hate going on Twitter, but it's part of the job. So, you know, in terms of generating interest and building up, you know, junior days and, you know, creating interest in the program, it's been different than what the previous staff has done. The transfer portal is very different. You know, Wisconsin used the transfer portal in the short amount of time that it was available. You know, I guess when it, you know, just kind of blew up, you know, they added 13 guys this year. I don't expect that to be the norm, but that was different. You know, they have gone after, at least offer wise, in just these last 48, 72 hours here, a lot of top tier 4-star borderline 5-star talent across the country. So, you know, whether or not they can get those guys on campus, it remains to be seen, but it's certainly a different approach. And I feel like this is a group where, hey, we were at Cincinnati for a while. We upgraded in terms of our brand, in our, you know, facilities and our resources. And we feel like we can recruit with the best teams in the country. Again, we'll see how they stack up and what kind of success they have. But I think this is a group that has made a big jump, and they're excited to see what they can do. Like I said, with a whole new set of resources and everything available to them, recruiting wise and facility wise and on the football field as well.
He is John McNamara, editor and recruiting analyst of Badger Blitz. I really appreciate the time and insight, my man. This is really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was John McNamara. I hope you enjoyed him and Scott Wright, as well as this podcast as a whole. Got some great stuff coming for you down the pipe. Was a little delayed getting the first pod out this week. Got a bunch of interviews lined up, and they all kind of stacked up on top of one another. Got a Mississippi-based Ole Miss alum musician, Watson Turnipseed, coming on the pod on Thursday. A really fascinating guy to talk about his career in music. He's also an attorney that practices international law. I think you'll really enjoy that one. They're going to talk some college baseball on Friday, and then some golf-related stuff coming to you next week. So a lot of good stuff cooking on the Rippy Rides pod lately. Y'all have a great start to your week, beginning your week. We'll holler at you here in a couple of days.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.